time ago when it was coffin.
Well, I was in it more recently when it was the middle branch.
Yeah.
That was the only time I was there.
Were you live dancing?
No. No, as a matter of fact, I was with another couple, and we were at some function at the country club.
Yeah.
So we're suits and ties and whatever. So we popped in just for shits and grins. Yeah, we were out of place.
Motion this evening, if everyone received copies, had a chance to look at them, if I have a motion to approve and second the minutes from the previous meeting.
Motion to approve the minutes.
Moved by Supervisor Gilmore.
Second.
Second by Supervisor Wambo. Any discussion? Otherwise, all those in favor? You the governance, aye.
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 Committee, aye.
Aye.
Chairman, committee members, supervisors, as I said, I put some notes up on the board there this evening. Anything that they'd like to discuss this evening. Any committee members have anything they'd like to bring before the committee, before the meeting? Yes, sir.
I've been in youth governance for 2 years now. I just want to say thank you for the opportunity. I'd like to let the committee know that I was awarded valedictorian of the academies at Indian Trail, and my work here in YIG definitely helped me in school, either focus on different areas or persistence in school, and I would say thank you for the program. It's a truly excellent program.
Congratulations.
Kenosha County is better for having it.
Thank you for being here. Anything else? Any other supervisors in attendance? Citizens' comments would be next. Any citizens that would wish to address the committee on any matter pertaining to any of this committee?
Yeah, John Poole, 6245 237th Avenue. I'd just like to say that the publicity in the newspaper, the negative publicity in the newspaper about beer in the parks probably could have been avoided if the other proposal would have been accepted or even looked at with Mary Beth Van Avery, who's had 20 years experience here in Kenosha County, profitable, I would say, and in good financial position. And maybe they should have taken a harder look at that proposal. Thank you.
Supervisor Poole, possibly, I was going to stay away from this type of discussion this evening, but it didn't pertain to a lot of business here on this. But what proposal, Supervisor Poole, are you speaking of?
Well, I talked with Mary Beth Van Avery before the contract.
Could you state who she might be?
She's the owner of the 75th Street Inn on Route 50.
Okay.
And I spoke with her before the contract was signed, and she had a proposal which she gave to the county executive. And she was not happy that hers was not even looked at because the other proposal was too far along, they said.
Well, now I guess I do have to speak a little bit on this. When this proposal was brought to the county executive, to the committee on the beer garden prospect, it was naturally brought to the county. The county didn't advertise like we did when we were looking for a vendor for our golf courses. And this person that you're mentioning did voice, I think, to Supervisor Gilmore some displeasure, and I know the county executive did meet with her. And what was pointed out to her, and the last I had heard was she was fine with it, that these people were putting up over $100,000 and she was free to make a proposal to the county. She declined. So
she did make a proposal at
right.
Matt, so.
Okay. The only thing I'm going to say about this, folks, is that we have always been open, since I've been on the county board, to public-private partnerships that benefit the citizens of Kenosha County. Without those, we would not have the state-of-the-art ball diamonds at Brightdale, which value in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, not chump change, all donated labor. If you've ever been there, take a ride. I threw out the first pitch because at the time, Chairman Joe Clark couldn't be there. It is brick dugouts, brick center. It's, as again, state of the art. Without private-public partnerships, we would not have the dog parks in Kenosha County. Citizens of Kenosha County, you and I as taxpayers do not pay to run those dog parks. It's all paid through fees. We would not have disc golf in two of our parks in Kenosha County if it weren't for all the volunteers, all the design being from the private sector. We paid, I believe, just under $10,000 in our labor and cement to put in the tee boxes and things at Kenosha Fox River Park. We would not have the bike trails that we have, and I believe you're going to see some evidence of that tonight in some brochures. Again, in the tens of thousands of dollars in labor from the private sector. The Kemper Center, we would not have an operation if it weren't for the 70-some volunteers that they have and the hundreds of thousands of dollars that they put into it. And we would not have the Pringle Nature Center if it weren't for that. So Kenosha County, and I'm not speaking for the administration, I'm speaking as a proud county board supervisor, has always been open to an entrepreneur bringing an idea to Kenosha County. And the person that you're speaking of, if they want to bring an idea, there's plenty of county parks. This one, these gentlemen came to Kenosha County and made a proposal, and it was accepted. There's many more opportunities for this to happen. I would also like to say that the publicity that was brought on this week on this matter is something as a county board supervisor I would not pursue, because we are looking at a civil matter between two partners in a whole different business venture. And that is something that, speaking from my own personal life, that you have to be very cautious in making judgments on something that is ongoing, that's a civil matter, not a criminal matter. I had a complaint made against me this year, as you're all aware of. Cost me my winter vacation, cost me a ton of money, and it was all found to be no basis. So when you speak publicly about something that's ongoing in a civil matter, be very cautious. Anything else from any supervisors? If not, we'll move on. Facilities. Mike.
Okay. I'll start with the focus on energy sheet. There's nothing to report, so nothing to amend there. Going from there to the ongoing projects, talk about the pretrial sealant replacement project. Bids were due 2-2 this month. We had 11 contractors submit bids. And just remember, that's the one we had bid out last year. We had 8 bidders last year, and the bids came in quite a bit higher. In this situation, the low bidder was Masonry Restoration at $43,900. And the low qualifying bid last year was $82,000. This work is going to start as soon as the weather warms up consistently above 32 degrees. It's going to take about 3 weeks to complete. That's all I have.
Is that what?
Got a few things, Mr. Chairman. Update on the fire alarm system replacement at the courthouse. We've got a March 24th finish date for the electrical and testing install. We've got March 28th for the Kenosha Fire Department to come and inspect it, bless it, and we should have any punch list items and training and stuff wrapped up by March 31st. Questions? I go on to the public safety building generator replacement. We got the state approval back, which was very nice. We worked hand in hand with our electrical engineer, the county, and the contractor, talking to the state beforehand to make sure that we got everything in line and sent to them, and the approval went very well. So we're looking at starting the electrical work April 1st. The delivery of the generator, we're looking at about May 20th, but we're going to do all the pre-wiring, everything we can beforehand, concrete pad, things like that, drop the generator in, and then the project should be wrapped up by June 15th. No questions? Go on to the public safety building, second floor project, along with the fleet maintenance building. We received the bids on February 23rd. It's about a $7.6 million budget. We're still vetting out a few things. We had some alternates, but it looks like the bids came in pretty much right on budget. Once we get things sorted out, it might be just slightly above, but we're looking okay so far. Like I said, once we get everything shaken out, but we're looking at an April timeframe to start up for construction. I'm sorry, May. Any questions? Courtroom Branch 4 remodel. We had the bids come in. The high bid was $272,000. The low bid, brand new company, we haven't had bid before, Highlander Improvement, came in at $98,000. So it was a significant discount. We actually gave them the option as in any bid that they can withdraw the bid, and they felt their numbers were right on. They felt very solid about it. So purchasing is checking out all their bonds and bidding.
Yeah, Frank and I have talked, so I wanted to give a little insight into what appears to be happening in the marketplace. All of the smaller projects that we're bidding, so in my mind smaller is like $1 million and below, we're getting tremendous numbers of folks showing up for those bids, and we're getting incredible pricing. Now, in this case, it appears to be too incredible. Of the six bidders, but this is a small project. We had originally estimated the actual construction part of it to be in the $300,000-$350,000 range. And that's based on past courtroom projects as well as what the architect's most recent estimate was. So the high bid was $271,000. There was, of the six bidders, there were four that we have not heard of. Frank, correct me if I'm wrong. But I believe there's four that were completely unknown, and one maybe we kind of heard of, but has never done any work for us.
For Kenosha County, they haven't, but the architects have heard of the other guys. If they're bidding it early, we're drawing in just more people. And
it appears to be part of it. It's still, we're definitely, by getting our stuff on the street early, is to our advantage. There's no doubt about it. But the $98,000 bid is from a firm from the Chicago area. They appear to be, as Frank indicated, the architect went to them that day and said, hey, you know, if you guys made a mistake, you have perfectly within the rights to withdraw your bid. And the guy said, no, I just think everybody else is too expensive. They appear to be an Eastern European-owned company. The person that owns it is from Poland. And all of the description that was given to Frank and the architect was that all of the craftsmen that they hire are guys from East Europe. So they have in-house their own woodworking, very rare, if completely non-existent, to find a contractor that has all their own millwork in-house. They've vertically integrated and they have a complete complement of in-house craftsmen in all the various trades. So we are still skeptical. They're not a small company. I believe I was told they do about $8 million in business a year. So they're, although they are a smaller company, this would be, scope-wise, it's clearly within their wheelhouse. They're doing purchasing, doing all the vetting of insurance and bonding and everything else to see where they're at. Frank and the architect are taking a ride down this week, I think, to see some of their work on some hotel restorations that they've done in the Chicago area to see, you know, how legit everything is. Because anytime you get something this low, obviously, in one hand you say, okay, that's good, but on the other hand, if you're not questioning it seriously, you know, we're not doing our job. So we're going to look into it and just see how legitimate the person is and what they bring to the table. But if it really does stand up, it's a game-changing kind of event. The number, like I say, on these smaller projects, we're getting sixes, five to, well, on the roof project, I think we got...
We've got eight people.
Eight, so five to ten, let's say, on all these smaller projects. So what my theory is that because we're 8 years out from the recession, the economy, the construction economy has improved enough that there are smaller entities that have come up and are starting to exist. The large companies, there's only a handful of them. And on any project that is large in scope that requires the horsepower, like the safety building project, the $7.6 million project, Brookside $20 million project, you're only getting those large entities capable of biting off, and there's still only a limited number. So there were some of the subcontract components of the public safety bid that we got two bids. In fact, on the drywall, I believe we got zero bids. That gives you the insight of what happens. So my perception is that, one, we're clearly taking advantage of getting out there early and getting our stuff on the street early in the year is clearly an advantage. For the smaller projects, there's more fish swimming in the pond, and they're all hungry. So we're getting some good positive results from that. On the bigger projects, which luckily we don't have any other really big ones after the public safety building this year for a while, so I think we're through that. But that is kind of what appears to be happening. There's kind of a number of things in play. If this checks out, you know, we'll obviously let the committee know next month, but because you guys are going to check it out, and we would be, you know, it's a game-changing kind of event for the construction of smaller projects for the county. There's no doubt about it.
Just no vodka that day, Frank.
we're going in the morning,
My mind fails me a little bit, but was the original proposal for that $225 for each courtroom? Or
the original proposal is actually $450. Okay. $225 a year, and then we split it between 2 years.
Okay, that's what it
was. It's about $300, $350 is construction, and then about $150 is AV, IT, audiovisual, IT stuff, architect fees,
lighting.
Kind of all those other soft costs that we usually do that ourselves. So,
well, if this place checks out, couldn't you just have them do two?
Well, the executive already asked that question. Yeah, it may be possible that we can get a second one designed out this year. And yeah, we still have to bid it because from anything over $25,000, we still have to bid it as a public works. But yeah.
Maybe they'll give you a discount on the second.
Right. It's wild. I don't think there's ever been anything like this.
What were the other bids? Just curious.
The middle bids?
There was, if you got the exact bid tag.
I got the exact
there,
bid tag. So we had $272,000. We had the $99,000 bid. We had $238,000, $228,000. $205,000 and $220,000.
So $220,000 is probably the sweet spot. Yeah, and
I was just curious.
That's not right.
Yeah,
that's not right.
I can't.
That's not right.
I'm with you.
That's not right.
So what happens if they come back and they say we made a mistake?
They can withdraw.
Well, no, I mean, once the project is underway,
it's too late.
But, they'll be vetted enough where
we have a
they can't just disappear.
A performance bond.
Yeah, there has to be a performance bond on the project, too. So if they pull out.
If they do $8 million a year, they obviously are doing some sizable project.
Yeah.
And it was shocking. Yeah. We went over these numbers last week.
It defies.
Did you look at it line by line? I mean, does it make sense, the numbers they're proposing?
It wasn't broken out. It's a.
That's what I would want to see.
It's a lump sum, and again, that's when the architect quizzed them on it and said, you know, what's part of the reason is, like Ray said, they do their own millwork in house.
They're very vertically integrated for us.
Yeah, not that I'm against it. It just
no,
it defies.
Right. In my line of work, it's something's too good to be true.
It typically is, you know.
But right. I'd love to be wrong. Just maybe the one thing.
I agree.
Yeah. And the other kind of thing was they wanted to get their foot in the door, not realizing that we have to. Well, we don't have to take a little bit, and that's why we're going down. The architect, myself, and purchasing, going to see their shop, see what their capabilities are. See two of their projects. One of them is a hotel that they've renovated like 90 some rooms on. So it's not a small project. We want to see something similar to what the millwork will be doing here. They have their own house electrician. So, you know, we're really kicking the tires.
It's an interesting dilemma.
The next one is almost equally as good, right?
It is. Again, we use the same formula we did last year of doing the engineering the year before, putting the bid right out in the street in January, and talking actually to Riley Construction and some other people. They said, you know, again, doing it that way, everybody's books are empty, and you're getting all the bidders, and they know it. Whereas if you wait later in the year, some guys are already filled out, they're not bidding it. So we got 8 bidders this time. And again, a healthy number, more than usual. And our criteria, we use the same as last time. They had to be in business at least 10 years doing roofing. And in this case, KASCH Roofing, KASCHAK Roofing out of Milwaukee. Our consultants worked with them on 10 different projects. Solid company, and they came in at $289,900. And again, really good price overall from what the consultant was thinking of. Thought it would be pushing, you know, maybe towards the high of the 300,000s, and high bid actually came out to $352,000. So again, we had a really good result. Purchasing is going through all of their bonding and insurance right now. So as soon as we get through that, we should be able to schedule them in.
And the budget on that was $550,000.
The budget on that was $550,000. The budget was put in back when they did the evaluation of all the roofs.
Right.
And they split this up. They realized it would be somewhere in the $500,000 range for these two pieces. So we got the other one. We got a great deal on the other one by bidding it so early. And based on that, this one is a little less square footage, but you're dealing with different levels. So. Again, we're getting some real good pricing.
Right.
What we're going to do this year, because we had one last year, the big roof we did there came in well below budget. Now, there's actually 3 sections, as Frank said. There's 3 different elevations to the roof here that's going to be done. It's actually more complicated than that one. We left those original prices that were estimated 2 years ago now, Jim. So this, now that's happened twice, when we propose whatever roof is next up to bat for, we're going to revisit those prices. Because it's not an anomaly. There's more competition in the roofing industry, so our consultant can take that into account, and we should be able to adjust those down so we adjust our budget for next year so that we're closer to where we need to be. Because last year it could have just been a fluke, but now we've got 2 years in a row where both large roofing projects, we had plenty of bidders, and we came in well under budget, so we should be able to adjust our budgets down next year.
That's it. Anything else, Frank?
No, nope. That's it.
You could look at this a couple different ways. The county taxpayer, I'm sure, will be pleased, because unlike the state, now that we've found out what they've done with their road projects, paying $2 or $3 billion, billions of dollars on some projects, over when they're done. On these major projects, we've been under. So I think we do have to look at what we're budgeting. But on the courthouse one, it could just be a total fluke.
Yeah.
You know, to see the roofing thing, that's been wonderful. Last year, it enabled us to do a couple other projects, major projects. It's very good to see. Any questions for Frank on any of this? We'll move on to highways. Clement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your pocket, you have a map showing the intersection of S, and also a line in the pocket is some of the background information. The challenges that we are facing with the airport, acquiring the airport land. And I also try to give you some of the risks that are going to be happening. The critical thing about the background information is that the process takes too long. It's going to take about 2 years, and we have to go with that 2 years in order to acquire that land. It's going to be way behind schedule. The risks are that, well, if we don't acquire the land promptly, we're going to have a significant delay in the schedule. And usually, significant delay always translates to costs. So in the packet, you have the map. We promise that we're going to bring something this time to show exactly how it is. If the map is not very clear, I have a bigger one here that I can display if you want to.
Everyone got one that you can look at and understand?
So just to give you a little bit of explanation on the map, if you take a close look at your map, you have the orange trapezoid and the blue one. The orange one is the proposed, because the city is proposing to extend the runway of the airport, and so when they extend the runway on the airport, the orange line demarcates the proposed runway protection zone, and that runway protection zone encroaches on to the intersection, and that's where all the problem is coming from. Now, because it is in that area, FAA does not want any structure in that area. It's including intersections, because to them it's a safety concern. And the main reason they consider a safety concern is just the fact that when cars come and stops, that creates a very, if there's a problem, then the consequences could be very, very, very severe. So if you look at it closely, the yellow line indicates easement demarcation, and the red line indicates permanent right-of-way acquisition. So the area that is of concern is actually the east side of AH, south of Highway S. That is the critical section, because that land is owned by the airport. So in order for us to acquire that land, as indicated, we have to get a land release from FAA, and FAA is not really forthcoming in order to release. Give us a land release. We have been taking steps to organize numerous meetings. We've had phone conversations with FAA, FHWA, and BOA, all the A's. And we've been trying to work ourselves to find out how we could really work around this issue in order to solve this problem. It's been very difficult working with FAA. Now we are in the process of having a follow-up trying to schedule a follow-up meeting, just to schedule the meeting is actually a problem in itself. So we're trying to schedule a meeting such that all parties will be in the same room, including FAA and FHWA. We are in the process of doing that, and as soon as that is done, then we'll determine the way forward. Otherwise, it's really impacting the project negatively. And how much is still yet to be determined, but it's not looking good. Any questions?
The only question I have about the map is I don't understand why the offset for the runway, why is it offset the overhang there from the runway itself?
Yeah. Everybody does. I did the same thing.
Why do they have that?
So it's not, if you look of the wider solid blue leg of it, that's actually the runway. And so that is on the center line with that blue trapezoid and that orange trapezoid, because that's the actual runway. The other one, I don't know if that's a taxi
lane. It's a taxiway.
Yeah, so then it's not offset. When you first look at it, it looks, but if you look at it, actually that leg of it is dead center on the center line of the two trapezoids. So that's the actual runway itself. Does that make sense?
No. the larger of the two roads that you see there is the actual runway, and that intersects right through the middle of the RPC.
So there's two runways.
The other one's a taxi.
It's more like a runway.
Yes, so you mean.
If it's a runway, it's only one runway.
Well, there's two. There's runway this way and a runway this way. The smaller road is a taxi.
And when we get them to change the runway to the taxi lane and vice versa, and you ship the whole thing over.
That still wouldn't matter because the proposed extension would still put you out over the road. H and S.
This might be too simplistic, and I'm sure it's been talked about, but this runway I know it doesn't run straight east.
We need to buy this land. We can't buy that land.
The runway. So, do they have room to have the extension of the runway on the other end of the property?
No.
No.
No. Because that would actually, that there's enough land. The FAA doesn't want you to get any closer to I-94.
Okay.
So the RPZ on the other side actually falls into I-94, but because you're not going to move I-94, they're okay with that.
Yeah.
But they would rather see H and S completely moved.
Oh, right. Yeah, Ray saw some crazy sketch they did.
Yeah.
I've seen those roundabouts. They're horrible ideas, but there's another suggestion that that would take H this way and S this way, and you completely lose the intersection. I don't know if that's palatable to
we haven't seen that sketch.
That's on the back of the napkin. It hasn't made it to paper yet, but that's on the back of the napkin at the moment.
So this is definitely happening? I mean, I know in the owner's mind says potential. This is going to happen.
It's a good question because they've been working on that thing for the past 10 years.
As the current sitting chairman of the Regional Airport Commission, I'll give a little insight. Yes. They've been working on the plan for 10 years, but it really didn't gain any traction until just last year. And so it's about a five-year process to get it approved. The FAA really wants to see this happen because they view Kenosha as a reliever airport. It currently cannot be a reliever airport because the runway is not long enough to accept planes much larger than a 15-seater. They want to start seeing the not the big planes, not the big commuter traffic, but you know the 30-seat planes that are currently going to Milwaukee and Chicago. They want to take those planes out of there and feed it into these smaller regional airports. So you can never say anything is definitely going to happen when it comes with to the government, but the FAA really likes this project and they really want to see this happen.
Just out of curiosity, is there any way you have any contact that we can touch base with FAA in order to schedule the meeting?
Yeah, I can. Do you want me to do it, or do you want me to give the contact?
Give us a contact, and if we could use you as a reference, and so that you get traction, because it's been so they've not been responding all this while.
Have you been working with the folks at? Have you been working with Corey at the airport?
Yeah, Corey was in our meeting, but working with FAA, we actually go through the BOA. We don't even have direct access to the FAA. And so we need to schedule a meeting.
I'll get you the contact information. We we sat down with, I forgot what their titles are, but basically there's four individuals that are responsible for this and other projects like this. They're out of the O'Hare area. FAA's got a nice big 500,000 square foot office building down there.
Yeah, that's where we're trying to get. We even offered to go down to the office there and have the meeting there.
Yeah, I mean, it should be difficult. I mean, we went down there a handful of times in the last couple of years planning this project. And
okay,
I don't understand why you can't get together in a room.
Well, I don't know. We've just been struggling getting response from that.
I'll send you what I have.
Okay, thank you.
But just so I'm clear, this takes precedent over our road.
Yes,
it does.
Yes.
Okay. Offer any type of money or
part of the problem is that I think everybody's been explaining is that to do this road project, you have to acquire some city land, and the city land is part of the airport. When they purchased that land, they did it with federal money, FAA money. So it's not like it's the city's land. They say, yeah, go ahead, take some. Since they had got 95% of the funding from the feds, they have to get approval from them in order to release it. And the likelihood of that happening because of this runway project is next to nothing.
And there's a good chance if we got rid of the structures, since they don't mind I-94 being in it, but we don't know that right now. If we got rid of the structures, they might say, okay. Because we're talking an extra couple million dollars that you move.
Another million.
We'll have to hire that firm.
right. The guys from...
It's complicated because, again, to do the road project, you've got federal dollars involved on that project as well, and then there's standards that you have to maintain for that, and so there's a direct conflict between the two federal requirements for each agency. And so that's, as Clement said, we're working. He met with R.A. Smith's, the consultant on this project for us, and so they met last week trying to develop some options so that when we get the meeting scheduled, we can actually talk about some potential options with all these federal officials.
Now, we would welcome if they would wiretap Clement so we could talk to them.
That would be a positive in this case, yes. So, yes, we just wanted to bring the committee up to speed so that you have a clearer picture of exactly what the dilemma is. And
well, that's the biggest highway project we've talked about in ever.
Ever, without a doubt. And a very necessary one if everybody's driven on S in the last year.
I've got a question.
Through the chair, Clement. I know from an engineering standpoint, we prefer to have both Highway S and Highway H re-engineered at the same time. That would be not the way of doing it. But just with the Fed's input, if we were looking at just taking that land or expanding Highway S on the north side, does that still run afoul of the aeronautical FAA?
Yes, that option was considered. We considered of just expanding S on the north side and upgrade H as much as possible within the footprint of the current existing right of way.
Right.
However, in the environmental document, for the environmental document to be reviewed, FHWA require us to resolve all conflict with every single stakeholder within the limits of the project. and of course the airport is a major stakeholder. And so FHWA will not even attempt reviewing the document until we resolve our issue with the airport. And so that brings us back to...
I see.
We've considered so many options in all these meetings.
Right.
And I didn't want to just go ahead and start giving you tons and tons of all information, but we've been looking at all those, and that was one of them that we looked at.
I see. Thank you. Yes.
Are you starting to look at rerouting the intersection?
Well, I would tell you that on the county standpoint, no, we are not looking at that. We are looking at working with the airport and see what compromise we can have in order to develop that intersection.
Okay.
If the airport is proposing to reroute it, then we can discuss and look at the various options. But the way, because we're so much far into the design now that the environmental document is tied to it, because that intersection is considered in, what's the term again, logical termini for the, so that's, if you change it now, it means you're changing the scope of the project. There's just so much that you can't touch now. If it was at a very early stage, then maybe we could have said, okay, scope change, we could do such a thing, but we're so much far into it that everything is locked down. So it gives me very little room to...
And I get it. I guess if I were a betting man, I'd be betting on your plans changing. If not now, it's sometime in the future when this does get approved. Because it's very likely.
Okay.
It's very likely the feds are going to want to see this road go away.
Even though there's 20,000 cars a day,
yeah,
on just H, I don't know, it's 40,000, I think, on, I mean, it's not the interstate, but it's not, you know,
yeah,
IAH.
I know. Just,
in terms of the impact on the community, that has a far greater impact than the airport does.
The economic value with all the trucks going on H, is it connection to the interstate?
We can debate the value of the airport, and I would vehemently disagree with you, but... If it's me, I guess it is me because I am sitting on this committee. I mean, I wouldn't, knowing what I know about the airport expansion, the FAA, and what their desire is, I would strongly encourage you to figure out something else, because if you proceed with it halfway, chances are in the next 3 to 5 years, it's all going to get redone anyway. Now, it might not be on the county's dime. 95% of it will be on the Fed's dime, but you know, it's still taxpayer money. It's going to get wasted. So that would be my thought.
Could you use a tunnel for one of those roads or both of those? Have you considered anything like that?
Yeah, it's kind of the Milwaukee approach.
Yeah. So that.
Well,
again, you don't know from a.
We didn't consider it at all, but.
Call it the sunnel, or it's going to be the chunnel. It might be in Summers, and so I'm going with sunnel.
Yeah, I don't know. We're going to have to look at some pretty creative things given the
tunnel. It's not going to be cheap.
Right.
Either way, it's not going to be cheap.
Anything else? Well, I'm overseas.
Yeah. On general operations side. We're continuing with our snow and ice removal when as necessary. And generally, the weather has been favorable, having spring-like weather. And so we are actually accelerating some of our maintenance work, and so that we can free up much of our time, so that during the paving season, we'll focus more on paving rather than doing site maintenance. So generally, that's what is happening, and it seems to be good, working well for us. Just for other project updates, County Trunk Highway H and Bain Station. This project is co-sponsored with DOT and the county. Bids were opened on February 23rd, and the apparent low bidder is Mawson Brothers, And in your package, you have a list of all the, there were 6 leaders, and each bid from the various contractors are all listed there. We are still in the process of reviewing the bid. Contract will be awarded by the 23rd of March. The anticipated start of construction is scheduled for sometime in July, but like after July 4th. That's for Bain Station and H. I don't know if there's any question on that. And then just to give you an update on milestones on the Kenosha County Public Works Fueling Station, we had our pre-construction meeting on February 15th, the start of construction, weather depending on May 22nd. The new fueling system will be operational by July 4th, and the decommissioning will take place sometime August and September. And then our county crew will go in and restore the area. And then we are hoping that everything said and done, will be using the new fueling station by the October 31st, and everything will be good to go and be ready for winter, of 2017. And that's all I have for today.
Well, and I have one question. Highway 45 is going to be redone this summer.
Mm-hmm.
Starts in March, I believe, sometime.
Well, it's supposed to be start March 15th. That
from the state line up to 50.
Correct.
Okay, so my question revolves around truck traffic. When I used to have to get permits for trucks, that's the way oversized trucks always went, Highway 45.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go 94, oversized trucks, they took 45. What are they gonna do with that, do you know?
Well, the detour route that was approved was taking the traffic from 45 to the interstate. And the Department of Transportation is so, I would say they are very, very smart. Maybe smart is the wrong word to use. They will always put the detour routes on their freeways, even though they realize that they're going to use other county roads. That way, they don't have anything to do with the county road. However, the detour route, in this case too, they have to use C because C splits. Yeah. Well, that's where it stops, and then it splits, and I think they use county, yes, and so that is the only county road that they requested for permit because they knew they couldn't avoid that county road. Now, I've had concerns from citizens, especially on D, that most of the traffic will be coming there. So people are concerned about speed. And some people are concerned about more traffic on the road.
Right.
And especially now, some trucks will always, definitely huge trucks will always be going down the road. But generally with construction, typically you expect those kind of things. And we can only do our best to mitigate it. Maybe you can't really restrict trucks from going to that road because the roads were built for trucks too, even though it's a county road, but even though they're a little bit smaller. So we just have to look for ways to mitigate the consequences of it.
Because 45 will be closed at some
correct,
point.
At some point, correct.
So when a guy gets a permit in the morning, you said to call in the morning,
mm-hmm.
get your permit, they're going to tell you which way you can go?
Well, no. The permit is requested. It's DOT. DOT is the party that requested for the permit, and once we accepted that, once we have provided them the permit, then they can use the detour route. All they need to do is to show it on their plan that in order to get from point A to point B, you can use this county road and get to this point.
Or I-94.
Or I-94. Okay. But they don't require a permit for I-94 because I-94 is a state facility.
Right. But right now, oversized, they make you stay off of it. 45 is the oversized load.
Yeah, now with oversized, permit, yes, for county road, there was still anybody with oversized load would still go for a single trip oversized permit.
Yeah.
But if it's a single trip, yeah, then we typically approve those permits because usually somebody constructing something, a building somewhere, a facility somewhere that they really need to take a huge size load over there, and if they don't, then they can't complete their project. So typically with oversized permits, we just have to get them a good way to get to where they're going.
Because 45 will be closed for quite some time.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, that was my question. I had one person ask me, and then I was trying to figure it out myself how they're going to do that.
And I believe there's a public meeting
next week,
right?
Yeah, at the Bristol Town Hall.
Expect a lot. Yeah,
Town Hall meeting. Yeah.
Right.
Because they changed. Kind of radically changed the scope of that project, downsized it. So that will be a news to a lot of people along the whole 45. So yeah. I'm hoping
people. It's a big stretch of road.
It's a big stretch of road.
All I would say is that we'll be keeping tabs on those projects, like we did for 165, and then we'll give you updates. And if you require us to get the contractor to straighten things out there, we can also do that.
Right.
And the contractor has. I attended the pre-construction meeting. I made them understand the level of service that we run down here in Kenosha, and so they're aware of it. And based on the way they're requesting for permits, I think they're going to provide us a high level of service.
Yeah.
I know most of them in there, so they know that if they don't provide a level of service, I'm going to hold them accountable.
Thank you, Clement. Any other questions for Clement? If not, Matthew Collins will move on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Parks.
So first, we have Silver Lake Park. We were able to install new LED lights within the Peach Pavilion restrooms and changing rooms. I don't know if you ever had the pleasure of using the lighted facilities in previous years, but it was, when I was taking the tour when I first got here, it was dark and dreary area. So with the new LED lights, we really sprucing it up, and something that was well overdue. So we're happy that that's done before our opening Memorial Day weekend. Also, another project that we're doing in-house because we couldn't find really a competitive structure that looked aesthetically pleasing was for a new fee booth at the entrance of Silver Lake Park. Everything was more modular design that you'd see for going into an industrial complex for check-in, check-out, and that really didn't speak to our park system. So we have really skilled in-house talent to actually construct this from scratch. So we already bought all the materials. We poured the concrete today because it's beautiful outside. So we're well ahead of schedule and hope to be actually completed with the fee booth within the next few weeks. So that's progressing well. Over at Petrified Springs Park, we have a beer garden update. The vendor is working alongside all county staff and the general contractor on the construction site plans. So those are moving forward. We're going back and forth to make sure the plans are specific to what the county's needs are as well. We're working with We Energies for a new electric service because right now it's only 100 amps in there and they need the 200 amp service. And moving forward with the permits in order to actually start construction shortly. Over at Shelter 5, one of the county's projects, we also installed our 200 amp servos panel, 9 outlets, and new lights on the interior. That was the only pavilion within Petrified Springs Park that we did not have electrical service to. A couple of years ago, we actually looked at budgets and it was just astronomical working with We Energies to get electricity actually to the pavilion. So after kind of working internally, we got those prices a lot cheaper than in previous budget cycles. So we're really impressed with that and happy that we can actually have our customers be able to plug in their crock pots. So moving on to volleyball courts. If you've seen, any question? Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. For the We Energy service and permits, is that cost going to be to the county or is that going to be cost to the...
Are you referring to beer garden?
Yes, I am.
Yes, everything for that is on the vendor.
So from here on out, all the costs accrued to bring the site up to par and all that, that's going to go right.
Anything that's strictly associated with improvements to the pavilion is on the vendor.
You're going to be included in the conversations that they have with We Energies?
Us being the owner, the county, we actually have to fill out that permit preliminary. So they can't fill it out on our behalf. I had to actually specifically request for the service, and then I work with the general contractor on all fees and everything else that would be paid through the vendor, the general contractor. Any other questions? No. Okay. I think I was on volleyball courts. If you guys had seen the volleyball courts and the posts that were typically around our park system, it was just basically one solid post that went up there and a couple of fish hooks and then a standard volleyball court net. We're improving those volleyball posts and nets this year as well. So I didn't want to send pictures without the nets actually there. So when we actually have finished the installation of the posts and nets, you'll be able to see a nice before and after of all the volleyball courts throughout Petrified Springs, Fox River, and Silver Lake Park. Pretty exciting for our recreation programs. All the things listed below are new initiatives to kind of celebrate our 90th anniversary to try to bring more awareness and free activities into our parks. First thing I have, I actually have a handout that I can pass as I talk, is yoga and CrossFit within the park system. And this is at Petrifying Springs Park. It's going to be a 10-week period where it's free to the public for typically it's going to be 5:30 to 6:30. Once a week between yoga and CrossFit. So we're partnering with CrossFit Kenosha that they're going to have certified instructors for each one of these programs within our park system. So that way it doesn't really cost us any money. It's just free advertisement for CrossFit Kenosha, and it gets people thinking about health and wellness with our park system. So we'll be advertising that online in our actual park, and we'll give it a shot and see how popular it is with our general public. So another new initiative is recreation programs for kids within Petrifying Springs Park. So this is called Tots in the Park program, and it's another 10-week program, and it's aged 3 to 5 year olds and with their parents. So it's kind of like typical from a Bobby and Me class you find with recreation programs, but it's interactive with one of our instructors and their parents to have weekly themed events for kids within our park system. So again, this will be free to the general public. And then also similar to that is a Wildlife Explore program. We're still working on the design, so no more handouts for that. But this one's just a little bit older in ages, 5 to 8 years old. It's more nature-based themes for our kids to come for an hour and kind of do different themes throughout the week. Their parents can participate, or they can just drop them off, and the kids can be with our certified instructors. And then the last thing I have for the new events and initiatives this year is our summer running series. We partnered with Kenosha Running Company in previous years with a lot of our runs and walks. But this year, we kind of just amped it up for the 90th year anniversary and came up with even more runs. We're having a total of 14 runs and walks. We already had some of them happen this year. But this is really nice to partner with this Kenosha Running Group because they really track all the runners. They do all the registration. We benefit by putting our name out there, bringing new patrons and constituents into our park system, more awareness, and we get our logo on there, so we're definitely a partner with all these running series. And we have a new one that's going to be happening every week through the summer, is the summer running series that's listed on that brochure as well. And it's just after work or school for kids and adults to be aware of more of our trails throughout the park system, because some folks haven't been on the Bristolwood trails or over at Pets, and it just has a different theme and a different location on a weekly basis on Wednesday evenings to try to bring more activities during the week. And then finally, my last handout of the evening is we came up with this really cool, and this was an intern that did this for us. It's our 2017 activity guide. And what it is kind of an all-inclusive guide. that show us all of our special events throughout 2017, a map of the whole entire Kenosha County system, split east and west with all of our bike trails, snowmobile maps. All of our different activities. So it's basically like an internal advertisement of everything that our park system offers. So we're hoping to really distribute this through all of our key partners throughout the year, so it brings more public awareness of what we do on an annual basis. So I think that Supervisor Elfman is going to be saying a little bit about this at our county board meeting. I can bring some boxes for distribution for all of our county board members. So whatever you would like to take with you, we will be able to offer, and then you can hand it out to your constituents as well. And then finally on there, we have a couple of events. We had one trail run over at Bristol Woods. We had over 90 runners because of the beautiful weather that we had, and partial proceeds went back into the parks as well as the Pringle Nature Center for that one. And then we got a couple different events happening this weekend. Another run at KD Park, and then the Pringle Nature Center has an annual maple syrup hike. And that is all I have.
Very cool, man.
Thank you.
I hope I told Supervisor they don't open that map, because I did it in my chair watching the news, and I had a hard time. Very, very nice. One of the interns did that. Was written.
He did.
And the mileage between the parks and everything is very nice. So hopefully now will this be at like the information center when you come into Kenosha County
The Visitor Bureau?
Like the Visitor Bureau.
Yep, we're partnering with the Visitor Bureau to make sure that they are all
the Visitor Bureau.
My friend's dad loves those.
Very cool.
He loves all the
different. Any questions for Matt on any of these activities?
Pinch hit because Dan went home looking a little green behind the gills this afternoon, so I said don't come tonight. So we had a soft opening, I'm going to call it, this past weekend. We just had Brightondale White open up. Had over 100 golfers on Sunday. They've already taken in just north of $25,000 in revenue, not from 100 rounds of golf. It's a lot of people buying season passes and stuff too, but they're off to a good start. He's working the business plan, as he indicates on here. They were down at the Chicago Golf Show a few weeks ago. They've got the March Milwaukee Golf Show coming up, not this weekend, but the weekend after. Very positive comments and a lot of interest in the courses, always at the Chicago. It's a real good show for us. He's changing some things around this year. Last year, if you remember, we attempted some digital marketing. Dan's still kind of working through what's going to work effectively for us from a digital marketing standpoint. I think a lot of companies are actually going through the same thing. So the stuff we did last year, working through the parent company and the Journal Times and Racine, really sounded good, looked like it had potential, but it really didn't pay off. So he's focusing more this year on the digital end of marketing with Golf Channel Solutions. That's a partner that we work with already, and we're just kind of expanding that role to see if they can bring a little bit more effective digital marketing to the table. They've got a couple of projects that they're finishing up to kind of refresh the clubhouses. The Brightondale Clubhouse, it was minor stuff. Counters replaced, carpets cleaned, ceilings replaced, acoustic ceilings. At Pets, we plan on doing a little bit more in that we were going to address some leaks in the bathroom, which turned out to be, as anybody who's done a home remodeling project knows, more than what we anticipated. Thought it was just going to be a simple plumbing kind of fix, but things had been leaking. It appears probably since a modification was made to the clubhouse probably 30 or 40 years ago, and some floor joists were rotted as a result of that underneath the bathroom. So those floor joists had to be braced, and then we were able to do the plumbing fixes that were required. Bottom line is all that work should be done, I think it's Wednesday this week, so that we were hoping to be able to open full on this weekend, but they're talking snow this weekend, so we're probably going to be delaying that full on opening till the following weekend of St. Patrick's Day, the 17th.
that's pretty much it. Just a lot of prep going on. Equipment is pretty much ready to go, and some of the seasonal staff, limited, has been brought back to get stuff ready to go. But we're gearing up, and hopefully the weather's going to break for good, and we won't just get teased with these nice days every now and then.
Anybody have any questions on the call? If not, we'll move on, Rita.
I'll give an update on the Brookside project. Supervisor O'Day was probably at the walkthrough this afternoon for the trustees. I wasn't able to make it, but anyone that wants to view it, it's really coming along, but it has to, because we're looking at May 17th as our move-in day. That is the day when we're going to be moving into the new facility. That's what the target is, and everything appears to be on track for that, but there's a lot of work that has to take place between then and now. Work continues in all areas of the building, and the CBRF, that part that's closest to Washington Road, just need to finish flooring, drop-in ceiling tiles, millwork and doors, trim and toilet accessories, kind of the finishing touches to things needs to be installed. The kitchen equipment is being installed. You probably saw some of that when you're out there. It really is taking shape. A mocked-up resident room is nearly complete. We did that in the CBRF. The only thing we're waiting for is the bathroom floor, which I just got an email late this afternoon that it will be on site by the end of the week. So that was the one thing that could have held us up. It still would have been better if it was here in the beginning of the week, but it should be okay. I'm waiting for a confirmation back from Camozzi that it's not going to be a problem, the fact that it's coming in at the end of the week. Let's see. In rehab, drywall should be complete in the entire structure. I think it's this week. Painting is well underway there. Tile work in the bathrooms is all in process. The elevator installation is nearly complete. Exterior siding is nearly complete because they've been picking away at that when the weather was nice, so it's pretty much all in. Actually did some curb work and stoops, concrete work, the last 2 weeks when we had those two or three days of nice weather. So they're ahead of the schedule on some of that stuff. Contingency fund remains in the orange zone. We haven't had any major thing nibbling at that. We continue to monitor activities to determine anything that we can save some money. One of the things we just had a meeting on last Wednesday was, I won't get into too much detail, but I just want to give you a flavor kind of what we're dealing with. So there's a wander guard system that's in place so that anybody with a memory issue can't get out of the building without somebody knowing it. There's also a nurse call system that's in the building. And these are two different systems, but there is the ability to integrate some of their functions in that second shift. In the old days, the current system, unless you're sitting at the nurse center and somebody's call light goes on, there'll be a call light physically in the hall, but if you're in another wing, you won't know about that unless you're sitting at the center of control. All that stuff is old. Now, wherever you're at in the building, you have a proprietary cell phone, basically. So if you're a nurse and you're on the second floor and somebody down below, it's, you know, third shift or something where there's limited staff, that goes directly to your cell phone and it tells you who's there and what's going on. Well, there probably will be a need, but we're not certain of, the need to have if somebody is trying to get out of the building that's not supposed to be, that has a bracelet on. Well, again, unless you're sitting at the control center where that message comes in, you don't know about it. You'll hear the alarm go off, but you won't know where it's taking place. So it may make sense to integrate those things. It probably will make sense long term, but we don't know that for sure. It's going to cost about $10,000 to do that integration of those two systems. We talked it through with all of the technical people last week, and the bottom line is we're going to get into the building and see how it actually operates. Some of this stuff you can kind of think and extrapolate in your head, but until you're in the building, you really don't know how some of these things are going to work. So we're going to wait and see how it works to see if we need to do that integration. Maybe we won't. So those are the kinds of things that we take literally on a weekly basis when we do our progress meetings. Those are the kinds of things we're looking at to determine if we really need to do something or we don't need to do something. And fortunately, the last few months, we really haven't had anything major that's required any additional funds. The transition teams, there's actually seven teams that... seven sub-teams of people within Brookside that are part of, I think, two larger teams.
that are developing all the transition plans, because there will be a complete move of all the residents. It all takes place in one day. And in order for that to happen, it may not be like the D-Day invasion, but there's a lot of coordination and stuff that's going to have to take place. And all that is being taken place. And we're actually using some of the lean training that they had last year. We're leaning on that, and we're using the consultant that helped us with that last year. She's helping spearhead some of those activities, too, so we can be as efficient and make sure everything goes as smoothly as possible. So that's taking place. And targeting May 17th is the day that we're planning on moving all the folks into the new abode. And it's getting exciting. Nervous, but excited. The rest of the department, the KCDC storage building, that bid was launched last week, the 2nd. Bids close on the 4th. Tentatively targeting 9:15 for the actual completion of that storage building. That's a building that I'm hoping will come in, that was estimated at $1.7 million, I think. And again, because it's one of those smaller projects, not small, but smaller, I'm hoping that we will get the same kind of 5+ bidders on it and hopefully get some aggressive numbers on that project as well. And then, Mike, we're working on developing what our next lean activities are going to be in facilities for this first half of the year. And other than that, it's just trying to keep up with all the projects that are going on. So that's pretty much it.
Any questions for Ray? One way we have the move-in date, then we'll still have a couple months of outside work.
Right, we'll still have site work that'll take place. The landscaping won't be done, but functionally the parking lot will be at least all binder coated. It won't probably have a finish coat or paint or striping, but it'll be. And we already determined that when the new lot's open and they move to the east side of the building where they start to stage, kind of where the parking is now closest to the entrance, that's where there's going to be staging for the renovation of that. We'll have within one parking spot, the same number of parking spots. We actually have one extra with all the stuff we're going to have on the west side of the building and the temporary lot yet on the, actually not even counting the temporary lot. We're going to have plenty of parking, so that will at least be a bonus. And
how long are we before we start on the reconstruction?
It's pretty much going to be, I would say, maybe not days, but a week or two, and we're going to be in, because plan is to move all operations out of the existing building. That wasn't the original plan, but we've got enough space mapped out where we can move everybody, all the administration. The only thing that appears probably will remain in the old building is in the basement, the kitchen, the main kitchen operation. That'll be the only thing that'll be functioning. Everything else will be moved over. So the construction guys will have pretty much a free rein to have at it. So hopefully that will positively impact how long that takes, because we're projecting that to be in like the 10-month range.
Right. And then we'll have another major move there.
Right. To put folks back to kind of unbundle them and put them back into single rooms.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah. Nothing else? If not, we'll ask for a motion to adjourn.